Ken McCusick joins us in studio. Good morning, Ken.
How you doing, Rob?
FilmStudyBaltimore.com. Ken, this team is so much fun to watch. If the left doesn't get you the right will, if they don't run the football down your throat, they'll throw it. Or in games like Monday, they'll do both. Seven consecutive games and rushing for more than 100 yards, more than their opponents, I should say. That's impressive, but they've done better.
Yeah, it's a historic number, and I tell you what, it's a fun time for using StatHead to find these little stats. This is one of the ones I really enjoyed, though. So the Ravens have seven straight games. The only other two teams that have done it seven straight times were in the 1940s, the New York Yankees and the Eagles from the late 40s. No team has six, no team has eight, and the team they're looking up at is the 2018-19 Ravens, who had nine straight such games, Lamar's first nine games in the NFL.
Yeah, wow. Unreal. Unreal. It's just amazing, Ed, the numbers offensively that he's putting together throughout his career so far.
Oh, they're stunning. The team is immensely talented. It's stunning. But they've got certain things that drive me crazy, like this. I've been concerned about, despite, it's not going to show up as blowing a lead because they won these games. Like the Cowboy game and now even the Buccaneer game, where they had these teams beaten badly. Why do they not put teams away and make you swallow hard at the end of every game and sweat?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it's not good. They're playing a lot of soft zone defense and giving up some yards. They are on the field for a lot of consecutive plays in the fourth quarter of those games, if you look for the common threads. And the Cowboys was like 24 out of 27. This game, it might have been 25 out of 28 with only that three-play break for Hill. They got zero production out of their pass rush in the fourth quarter. Now, when I say that, I'm talking about the interior defensive linemen where they were shorthanded, and they also didn't get a single pressure in the fourth quarter. Now, Pierce had one on a two-point try.
Right.
That doesn't really count, but it did count. Yeah, but it's one of the reasons why it's very hard to play defense in the fourth quarter. Is you get very tired at the rotational positions, and you give up tons of free opportunities.
And this is why I was really trepidatious about bringing Dean Pease back, because to me, this is his trademark. Yeah. It's a soft zone at the end of a game where you give up a lot of yardage and points. It's like, I don't like this at all. These games should have been just, you keep the pedal down, you put pressure on them every single way and do what you did for the first 50 minutes of the game.
Agreed. Ken McCusick, FilmStudyBaltimore.com, join us. Ken, I've thought for a long time that they could get so much more productivity out of Rashad Bateman. I think Rashad Bateman was more victimized, more so than the culprit. What was the key to his success Monday night?
Yeah, first of all, they're playing a lot of man coverages and an opportunity for Bateman to be open down the field because they're committing to the line of scrimmage the way the Commanders did the week before as well. So there's some of that. Also, there's just clearly a better trust between Lamar and Bateman right now. He looked for him on an extended play. The one where he rolled to the right sideline, he hit him for 59 yards. He waved him to the middle of the field and just threw the footballs. He's trusting that Bateman is going to get to the spot. He can do that when the backs of the two players are turned to him because he's only giving that information to Bateman. And so that was a great one there. He did the same thing to Likely in the end zone. Previously on the amazing Lamar sideline throw. So from the words I never thought I'd say department, yeah. Rashad Bateman leads the NFL in yards per target at 13.1 for all qualifying players who have 4+ targets per game.
What do you think let's stick with Bateman a second. It was funny. Bateman blamed the media about the relationship. He said it would never, I'm not buying that for a second. If you look at the stats, he was not a favorite of Lamar's. But what do you think the turnaround? Because all of a sudden, it looks like his confidence in him. Was it what the Buccaneers were giving him, or is it just,
Some of it probably came from the Commanders game. I think he caught all four balls that were thrown to him in that game. He is a good... The best thing for Lamar is to be an extended play target. And kind of the worst thing, and it's because Bateman's strength, is to be a guy who needs to have the ball in the air when he comes out of his break. Because Lamar wants to see the player break. And probably rather be boiled in oil than admit that was true, but it's what I see on the field is in terms of how he's making throws. He really needs to see that player crossing so he can judge where that ball needs to be or coming back to the quarterback before it happens. Well, Bateman then loses his separation advantage if you don't throw it immediately before he makes his break. But I've really liked it. And you know, the bomb to Bateman was one of the few balls Lamar's ever thrown in his career that hasn't been overshot Bateman by 10 yards.
Yeah.
No.
And again, that tells me that these two have probably been working together a little bit more. Maybe that's a part of the trust here with Ken McCusick. FilmStudyBaltimore.com. Ken, I thought the Ravens did a move that was genius. To me, you're watching the All-22. I'm just watching what the camera shows me. It looked like the Bucs basically loaded the box, selling out the run. Ravens knew they wanted to weaken that defense and push them back a little bit, and they weren't going to do a lot of running. So they just kept Derrick Henry on the sidelines. To me, that's the rest that you give a 30-year-old running back when you can afford the rest of those situations. I thought it was genius.
Sure. I mean, hey, first of all, you want multiple running backs who can actually give you something to be on the field. But Henry, if he just comes in the second half of games, is extraordinarily valuable in that. I mean, they say he gets stronger as the game goes on. That's not really what's happening. What's getting happy is everybody else is getting weaker, and he's not dropping off that much. And that's that's really a great situation to have. If you go back to the mid-1980s, the Redskins at the time had a great two-back combination where they bring in Ricky Irvins in the second mm-hmm. half to relieve Beiner.
It used USC,
to be a half of each, and that really worked out for them. I think this kind of thing for the Ravens is great. I'm not seeing a strict one half at a time platoon. What they're doing at the Hill is perfect in terms of the plays they have them in for.
Sticking with the offense, the Buccaneers dominated time of possession. Mm-hmm. They had the ball for 10 more minutes than the Ravens, yet the Ravens put over 500 yards on offense and 41 points and all that. Do we now have a quick strike offense? Because they didn't grind things out this game. They put up a ton of yards, but they did it in big chunks.
Yep. I mean, a short number of plays. They only had 54 offensive plays in this game, and the Bucs had 77, I believe. But that's actually a problem. They allowed 11 of 17 on third down. The Ravens scored very quickly from all over the field, of course, as you're talking about. And that does end up with some tiring, having four defensive linemen active. Again, mm-hmm. a problem in a game like that.
You know, we don't have any more, Ed. An either-or offense. That's what we don't have. If you have to have more than 10 minutes of time of possession than your opponents, they'll have it. If they don't have to have that, they won't have
it. That's not surprised. Usually a dominating time of possession.
Ken McCusick joins us from FilmStudyBaltimore.com. Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on the Fan. Ravens defeat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers 41-31. Baker Mayfield with a big game. 31-45, 370. A lot of those yards were in garbage time. He did have the two interceptions. One was a drive killer for the Buccaneers. I think that turned the game around, to be honest with you.
The play.
But he sacked three times, 14 yards. But I thought he had a little bit too much time and was able to move around too much in that pocket, Ken.
Yeah, very, very clean opportunity set for him. He had 17 ample time and space opportunities. And there, that usually is about in the high 20% range. But he had only 10 pressures the entire game. They dropped back 48 times to throw and had a sack or pass 48 times. That's an unbelievable low number of pressures. And a lot of that was in the fourth quarter when they're running all these consecutive plays. And the Ravens are really waving the white flag also, trying to get Todd Bowles to figure out it's time to end the game.
Right.
And didn't happen.
Yeah. Talk a little bit of Roquan. I mean, obviously the offense gets all the ink because it's spectacular. It really is this year. You got Lamar and you got Derrick Henry. And I've never had this much fun watching Ravens football. Roquan's still carrying that defense. In my opinion, him and Hamilton are just indispensable.
Yeah, they're playing great, and there was some question the first couple games of this year. Each of them missed some tackles, but Roquan is now, with 18 tackles in this game, has made 59 consecutive tackles over the last five games, which is just absurd. I think we did see one thing is that they keep sticking him way up in the A-gap, and he's having trouble covering routes on the outside. They made note of it on the broadcast. I really liked what Tampa Bay was doing in that respect because they line up like a yard and a half, 2 yards off the ball, and their linebackers can still get around. And they also have some more choice of gap that they can use. You probably fool the lineman a little bit less on where you're going, but that just seems like, to me, a superior way to do it.
Ken McCusick joins us. Ken, the internet would tell you that Iceland is the safest place in the world.
Sounds like you got that from Jeremy.
EC... it's really the safest place in the world. That's Ed Circle. And when you're in Ed Circle, he never asks about you. So since he won't, I will. What were the Tampa Bay Buccaneers doing at the end of the game? Even after the gruesome, gruesome injury that we saw that stopped the game for Chris Godwin, the right X play, they threw the ball again. What was going on there, man?
I have no idea. It's just it was beyond weird. It was weird when they were still trying, even the onside kick, down 17 with 3 minutes to go, and they just missed that 2-point conversion where they could have made it a two score game. At that point, just run the game out. If you look back only 2 weeks, 3 weeks, I guess, in that Buffalo game in week four, it's as if the two coaches were communicating from the sidelines. They ran the last 7:17 of that game off in 11 plays. Think about that. Mm-hmm. That's more than 30 seconds per play they took. The last 7:17 of this game took 28 plays.
Oof.
And so, you know, and then what does it finish with? They have five passes after Godwin's injury, five passes in a row, all additional chances. And then Mayfield runs for 12 yards and doesn't slide on the final play of the game. Just hilarious.
Forget the Ravens for a second. What do you think this does now? Because it's obviously a serious injury to Godwin. Evans is a star, and he's questionable now with the hamstring, which was bothering before the game. How does this affect their ability now going to play the Falcons for the division lead? Like, is that a huge hit for them, or is it?
Yeah, I'm certainly not worried about what happens to Tampa Bay. It is a hit for them. They have decent backup receivers. McMillan is a guy who probably can step up and make some plays based on just what we saw yesterday or 2 days ago. But I'm honestly just not really that worried. They play in the NFC South, which is a very weak division. NFC in general is very weak, so they've got all sorts of backdoor possibilities. And they'll probably make the playoffs, and they'll probably be one and done.
Yep. Ken McCusick, filmstudybaltimore.com. Ken, we sat here, I think it was after week three, and the Ravens just ran the football. And people called and said, this is the identity. And I said, I don't want this as the identity. And I was asked, put the pushback, well, you want them to throw all the time? I want the identity to be, we can do whatever we need to do to win games. That has become their identity more so now than I've ever remembered before.
Yeah, I would agree. They've the only offense they ever had that was even in this league was the 2019 offense that was even more run dependent.
Right.
That team went on fourth down. They said, try and stop us again, you know, kind of thing. I love that offense, and it was slightly better so far than this year's offense at 3.08 points per drive to 2.95 being the major marking point there. But I think this team maybe has a chance to catch it from behind. Won't be easy, but it's a great offense, and they certainly have skill position players that are very likable all over the place. It's just a really nice thing to have.
They're not pass dependent. They're not run dependent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, literally, they kept Derrick Henry off the field as they were driving the football down the Buccaneers' throats.
I think the one thing I would push a little stop sign on is that this team has a really weak offensive line, and the offensive line is 5/11 of your offense, so they're very capable of hosing up. So people want to talk about skill position players all the time, and I like the skill position players. They're great, and Ronnie Stanley has played great, and Tyler Linderbaum has played generally very well, though he didn't have a good game on Monday.
Yeah.
But the rest of the interior line looks questionable again. I'm not completely sold that Rosengarten is there yet, although he scored pretty well in 3 out of 4 games. It's a group that has some troubles.
Yeah, and it's important because that's how they lost to the Bills in the playoffs years ago. When that was a 10-whatever game, the offensive line just took a dump and then they couldn't do anything. Anyway, we're talking earlier about the upcoming games now with the Ravens going to be favored. I've been favored all year, I guess. But 3 division games in the next 4 games, Browns, Bengals, Steelers. I would think the Steelers are the most challenging because they look like they're pretty good this year. The Browns or Bengals worry you, or do the Steelers worry you?
Every Sunday worries me a little bit. I think you have to be a good fan. You have to really be a worry wart. And then you want to be on the internet looking up at 3 a.m. what's going on with, you know, yards per target and whatnot. Even the Browns, I'm a little bit concerned. You know, they've got something new to play for. They've got a new quarterback to play for. They're gonna like that. The Bengals are maybe turning around their season. They look like they're probably more likely than not to me right now to make the playoffs. Still, and that game is going to mean a lot to them in Baltimore. And the Steelers, of course, they know if they win 1 out of 2 and anything is any kind of stumble by the Ravens, they could still win the division. So,
Ken McCusick, Film Study Baltimore. Tell folks in Baltimore why they need to be a part of Film Study.
I appreciate it, Rob. So 9 podcasts a week, 2 articles a week. The big ones are on the offensive line and the defense. And there's one that breaks down the failures against the pass this year into what's really a function of the pass rush itself and what's a function of the other players and scheme behind it.
Ken McCusick, talk to you next Tuesday.
Thank you.
Whose legacy needs the World Series more, Aaron Judge's or Shohei Ohtani's? We'll talk about that at 8:45. But on the other side, Ed Norris is commissions Baltimore.
Yeah, we're going to talk about something that may be pissing off the NBA. I wanted to get away from crime today and see how people feel about this.
Thanks a lot. Commissions Baltimore up next on The Fan. It's Commissions Baltimore with Ed Norris. What's going on there, Eddie?
Well, it's something that's, you know, probably minor in the minds of a lot of people, but I'm just curious what people think as far as kind of like a power play here, in my opinion. And that's the NFL flexing on the NBA. Now, for as long as I can remember, Christmas Day was the NBA's day.
Yep.
That was their day. Marquee matchups usually. You know, it's just the way it has always been. And you kind of get used to that, you know? You get used to it. And football, you know, there'd be Christmas games if it fell on a weekend in the NFL, but not. Christmas Day is a Wednesday this year. It's a Wednesday. And the NFL is putting games. The Ravens are playing Christmas Day. I just curious if it just. First of all, why are they doing this? Like, why do you need to do this again? And I don't know, I hate to say they're putting the players in danger again, but you talk about a short week. I mean, the Ravens play the Steelers on the 21st.
Mm-hmm.
And playing in Texas on the 25th. That's no rest at all. That's 4 days between games. It's like, actually, they have the 22nd, 23rd, 20th, you have 3 days. It's like, why would you do this? It's like, to me, it's like a power grab. They're just going to swing their Johnson in front of the NBA and say, now we're taking over your day too. And now, more than that, you're so concerned about safety, you're going to have people playing on Christmas Day on like almost zero rest. Like, I don't know. I just think it's really unnecessary and kind of irresponsible. I mean, I just don't understand what would motivate them to do this, especially because it's a holiday. It's like I said, it's not like Easter. It's always on a Sunday or Thanksgiving on a Thursday. Christmas moves every year. So you're going to have Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday games, could be very short weeks. You know, you're going to play on a Thursday and make them come back on a Sunday as well. Like, I think this is bad policy.
Could I talk to Joe for a second?
Yes.
Joe, do you find this interesting that now this becomes a topic of discussion now that his Knicks are relevant?
Yeah, it didn't get
you know.
Before.
You notice all of a sudden,
it's always bothered
all
me.
Of a sudden, the Knicks are relevant, and he cares about the NFL, the sport that he loves, messing with the NBA.
Unfortunately, he's going to have to watch the Ravens and the Knicks. Before, it was just he just got to watch the Knicks lose.
Let's go back to EC, Ed Circle. This dude is so freaking obvious. He's worried about the NFL stomping on the NBA.
It's a good thing the Chargers aren't playing.
Am I in bizarro world right here?
At least I'm consistent.
This is...
Coincidentally, I didn't know this till just now. The Knicks are playing Christmas Day.
Yeah, you knew that. You knew that.
It's been that way. Like,
remember the time the Knicks
years.
Didn't play on NBA Christmas Day? Like, that's me either. Me either. Oh, my... I'm sitting here looking at him like... Have you no shame?
No.
Ed Norris, folks, is upset that the NFL, particularly the Ravens, are playing on Christmas Day in a year in which his Knicks are finally relevant. Can I put you at ease for a minute?
Sure.
And I hate to ruin your commission. They're
playing
Baltimore.
San Antonio.
I hate to, the Knicks play at noon.
Yes.
Ravens play at 4.
Yes.
You'll be fine.
Yeah. Ed, what was it like, though, in 1947 when the Knicks played the Providence Steamrollers for the first time?
At 2. I can't.
I'll get you a bottle of Book Latte, and you can watch both games.
But damn. It should be known, the Knicks have played on Christmas Day more than any other team. 54 games. They're 24-32.
I'm like, what are you doing? Stop. I wanted to say, just stop it. Just stop it.
All right. You want to talk carjacking?
Yeah, right. Let's get back to crime.
But to your point, no, honestly, all jokes aside, to your point, the NFL has no mercy. They have no boundaries. And there's such a thing called a gentleman's agreement. And I'm sorry, ladies, if you feel like we're being gender dominant. That's a gentleman's agreement. Mm-hmm. Agreement. And for so long, the two sports had that gentleman's agreement. And it's like now the NFL doesn't care about anybody. They just want to. And Mark Cuban said it best. I'll say it again. He said it best about 10, 15 years ago. Greed is going to overtake that sport.
He did say that.
It's going to overtake it.
Yeah. No, he 100% said that. And I think he's right. At the end of the day, a lot of people felt that way. And there are, you know, it's funny. You jog my memory a little bit. You talk about gentlemen's agreements. You remember we were talking about Bronny and LeBron?
Yes.
Mark Howe was with the Flyers, and Gordy had been retired. They made a deal with the, I can't remember who they went to. This was Hartford. When they were still in WHA, they agreed to play there, but the Red Wings waived rights to Gordy so he could play with his son. So you talk about, there are agreements made.
But yet, they people acting like, you know, this never happens, right? Man.
No, there was all kinds of things that went on with that. They all had to make concessions, and they did it because it's Gordy Howe.
It's Gordy Howe, LeBron James.
Right.
By the way, for those of you that are thinking LeBron James is some bum, I knew this, but I wanted to find it so I could read it, just in case you don't believe me. Coming out of high school, Bronny James had offers from several schools, including USC, where he signed, and Ohio State, where he considered, because that's where his dad is from.
Yeah.
All right? Or the option of skipping school and joining Overtime Elite or NBA G League, Ignite. Well, if he has the option to do that, he must be pretty freaking good.
Yeah, sure.
He must be. Every kid doesn't have that out. Now, you can say, well, it's because of LeBron James. No. He was pretty good. The kid had a heart condition his freshman year at USC. He had the option of either going to college, going to Overtime Elite. Overtime Elite, for those of you who don't follow, is a league that some of these kids go to now. They get paid in that league. They don't want to go to college for one and done.
Yeah.
They go to Overtime Elite, NBA G League, Ignite. Instead of going that one and done year to college, Bronny James had that option.
Yes.
He chose college.
And yes, he did. And that's why I don't know why people get upset. It's funny. I just looked it up here because I knew about this. But they used the term, quote, due to a gentleman's agreement between the Whalers and the Red Wings, Detroit opted not to exercise the right to reclaim Gordie Howe. And did the same thing with Marty.
Why?
So they could play together. Yeah, obviously. It was a gentleman's agreement between the Red Wings and the Whalers. Yep. So
and by the way,
it's not uncommon.
Ken Griffey Sr. and Jr. were both at courtside last night. You know why it meant something to them? Because they played together.
It meant something to them.
They played together.
Right.
Come on, man.
Yep.
You know, stop. If Bronny James did something tragic or criminal, and that was the headline last night, everyone would be talking about it. But because they did something classic, now you want to hate.
I don't know why people care so much.
I don't get it.
I think it's kind of cool, honestly.
I think it's absolutely cool. I have no connection at all with LeBron James. This one I understand.
Yeah, and I think the reason is because we're both parents. I'm assuming almost everyone criticizing him is probably a parent. I bet.
Yeah.
You wouldn't do this for your son?
Absolutely I would.
Of course.
And by the way, to Mike, who called and said he laughed, he chuckled because LeBron James told his son, you have to earn it, nothing's given. Let's keep something clear. He was given an opportunity.
Yeah.
He played 3 minutes last night.
He played 3 minutes last night.
He was given an opportunity.
Right.
Everybody hopes to be given an opportunity.
Yeah.
What you do with opportunities are up to you.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's unreal. You want to take a phone call on this?
Absolutely.
Nell and Owens Mills. What's up, Nell?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Not much. What's going on with you?
I'm good, man. Hey, I don't disagree with the fact that LeBron James and his son, I'm cool with that. I actually think it's a really good thing. I would love to work with my father, right?
Right.
However, I think what the caller earlier was saying, that he was given an opportunity, but he wasn't ready for the NBA. I'm not saying he wasn't a talented basketball player, but at the moment that he went in the NBA, he wasn't ready for the NBA. Because of the heart condition, probably. But either way, at the moment that he got drafted, he wasn't ready.
Let me ask you a question now. Is Giannis' brother ready for the NBA?
Who?
Giannis' brother.
I have no idea.
Exactly.
He's terrible.
Exactly. He might be the worst player in the league, but he's there. And because he's not LeBron James' son, no one's talking about it. No one's talking about it. He's been in the league multiple years, might be the worst player in the league. He's on the team because of his brother. That was the best phone call we could have gotten. Because he had no idea who Giannis' brother was. He had no idea Giannis' brother played in the league. You know why? Because Giannis is not LeBron James. My point is, it happens. You all are just butthurt about it because it's LeBron James. That's it. So I'm acting like this is the first time this has happened. Give me a break. Let it go. Let it go.
These agreements are made all the time. Seriously.
How aggressive should the Ravens be during the trade market? We'll talk about that at 9:15. But on the other side, whose legacy needs the World Series more? Judge or Ohtani? Baltimore's Big Bad Morning Show on The Fan.
I feel like everything's obvious. You know, hits for average, hits for power, the speed. You know, doing what he did this year with the 50 stolen bases, it got talked about a lot, but I don't think it got talked about enough. It's just he's an impressive athlete, you know, the best player in the game, and you know, what an ambassador for the sport.
That's Aaron Judge on Shohei Ohtani, who is the best baseball player, Shohei is, that I've ever seen in my life. The best baseball player. We could ask the topic for another day. But I don't know of a better baseball player than Shohei Ohtani.
I have never seen a better one. And as we all know, I'm old. So I've never seen a better baseball player.
A little bit. Don't worry about that, though.
Yeah. God, any luck, you'll get there.
God loves you.
God loves you. Let's hope so.
Ed, neither of these guys have World Series championships. Neither of these guys have been to the World Series. Judge stayed in New York to hope to get to one. Mm-hmm. Shohei went to L.A. and the year number one, he got the one. Out of these two superstars, two of the best players in baseball, maybe the best two players in baseball, who needs this more? Whose legacy needs this more?
Judge. Plays for the Yankees. They haven't been there since 2009, right? Yeah. So he's never been there. And I think, you know, all these years they haven't. And again, being a native Knickerbocker, if the Yankees aren't in the World Series, like every year, people are pissed off. They haven't been there in a long time. So it's like for them to go, I think they need this. He's had an incredible year. I think he needs it. Ohtani played for a perennial loser. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Angels had the best player in baseball before Ohtani got there as the best player in baseball.
Yep.
And they still, and then they had both of them. And they still did nothing. So, I mean, nothing was expected. His legacy is cemented, I think, already just because of the oddity of him, that he's a, you know, an incredible pitcher and an incredible bat. And he can steal 50 bases a year. What else can you say about a guy like this? World Series would be nice, but he'll have other opportunities. I just think Judge needs it more.
Man, it was Shohei for me because what he carries for his country and all those things, mm-hmm. It was. I'm still going to say Shohei because of those reasons. Shohei not only carries his team, but he carries his entire country. And as far as I'm concerned, no one has been at the top of his game like him from there has won one. The only other player, like that would have been Ichiro, maybe?
Ichiro, yeah.
Nobody else has been the front man for their team from his country. So for that reason, I say Shohei. However, for the reasons that you said with Judge, what Yankee legend has not won a World Series? I don't know if Dave Winfield won a World Series, and Dave Winfield is not regarded as being one of the legends of the Yankees, like Reggie Jackson, Derek Jeter,
Mickey Mantle,
and maybe because he didn't win one. Did Winfield win one? No, I mean with the Yankees, did he win one? He did not win one with the Yankees. I know he won one with the Twins, right? But he did not win one. With the Yankees. Did he win one? No, it was the Jays. Okay, the Jays. Yeah. But he didn't win one with the Yankees, right? And I think that's why his star is a little tarnished with the New York Yankees. Because he came after Reggie Jackson, was always compared to Reggie, which is an unfair comparison.
It is unfair.
But it was a comparison.
Yeah, it is. And it's, look, if they win, it's at 28. It's remarkable.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just absolutely remarkable. But I still think, I just think it's still the Yankees and Judge need it more right now. I just do. I just think it's been a while. Well, it's like going way back. Mel Stottlemyre never won a World Series. He's one of the most famous Yankees. Who, you know, and Mattingly never won one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You ever think that, honestly,
Ricky Henderson.
I hate Ricky's just plays for so many teams.
I know, he's an A in my mind. But
do you ever think that maybe, and I know this may be a reach, Ed, but follow me on this. Why isn't Don Mattingly in the Hall of Fame? You think if he had won the World Series in New York, he'd have been in the Hall of Fame? You think in the back of a voter's mind?
I definitely think that weighs on people, yeah. Yeah.
Like, he's not, well, he's great, but he's not one of the greats. He's not a, you know, he may, that Yankee bias of him not winning one may weigh against him not being in the Hall of Fame.
He missed it on both ends by 1 year when they had the Yankees had a drought.
Yep.
It was like 81, they were there.
Right.
He debuts in 82. And then his final season is 95. They go right back in 96.
Yeah, with Tino Martinez.
So think about it. So he really, and he was one of the most beloved Yankees
Tino
of all time.
Tino or Tito? It's Tino, right? Tino Martinez?
I think so.
I think Tino. Anyway, that guy. Yeah. Came from Seattle to help them win the World Series. I don't know. But you say, not Kikuchi, you say Judge. And I can't, it's hard to argue against that. But I also say I think Shohei Ohtani really needs to win one as well. 410-583-1057 is the number. Should the Ravens be aggressive at the trade deadline? We have reason that they should be very aggressive. We'll talk about that as 9:15. But we have a reason that they should be very aggressive. A reason that just occurred today. We'll talk about it up next right here on The Fan.